Hi folks, Joe Stagner from Microsoft here with video number 13 in this video series on building ASP.NET web applications using Microsoft Visual Web Developer. In this video, we're going to tackle an introductory look at building SOAP-based web services and service-oriented programming using Visual Web Developer and ASPX. So, the thing about service-oriented programming is that we've got a bit of functionality that lives in one place on a machine. And we want clients, no matter where they are, to be able to access the logic in our service methods on that server. Now, historically, and by the way, this is often referred to as distributed programming. So we have bits of logic that live in different places on different machines. Historically, before the prevalence of the World Wide Web, we did this in isolated environments where we had complete control over the networking infrastructure. So we could use whatever protocols, whatever proprietary technologies that we wanted to, and we had complete control over the infrastructure. But the prevalence of the Internet and the World Wide Web have made obvious the need to be able to take advantage of this model of distributed programming over the public Internet and the technologies that support the public Internet. So even if you're building an application that's going to run inside your own corporate organization, by and large, corporate organizations these days use the same technology that the World Wide Web uses. So even if you're working on an isolated network, you're still likely to be doing web services programming over TCP/IP and HTTP, the standard protocols that run the World Wide Web. So let's talk just for a minute about protocols and why this is important. So TCP/IP and HTTP, the Hypertext Transport Protocol, are the primary, not the only, but the primary protocols that power the web. And the two ports that are primarily used for web-based traffic are port 80, which is the standard HTTP port. So when you point your browser at a URL, the port that that request and response take place on is normally port 80. The alternative common port is port 443. That's the SSL port, the encrypted HTTP port for web communication. And those ports are commonly used everywhere that the Internet is accessed. Now, the advantage to that, and the reason that we need to be able to make our method calls and take our service responses on those protocols and specifically those ports, is that in order for a client and a server that's hosting a web service to communicate with each other, all of the infrastructure between the client and the server need to be configured to allow the traffic of the type that those request and response conversations will take place on. So if we were going to use ports other than 80 and 443, for example, every firewall between our client and our server would need to be open to the port number that we were going to have that specific conversation on. Now, certainly, systems administrators can open up specific ports, but the problem is, first of all, if our communication is going to be taking place over the World Wide Web, it's unlikely that we could custom configure the entire path of that communication. The other big problem, though, is that to maintain a secure network infrastructure, it takes some pretty advanced IT professional skills. And every time that you add non-standard ports or additional protocols or what have you to your infrastructure, you create an additional maintenance burden for the administrators of that infrastructure, and B, you create a potential additional security problem in that infrastructure. So we really, as an industry, want to be able to have these programmatic conversations over the standard ports and the standard protocols. So XML web services are going to take place on TCP/IP and HTTP over port 80 and port 443 if it needs to be encrypted. So as I mentioned in this video, we're going to be talking about XML web services, SOAP web services to be specific. And there are other ways that we can make service method calls over the public Internet. We can use AJAX style calls using JSON or basically any REST style protocol. We can send plain old XML or POX. But there are there are some advantages to using one way versus the other way. There are a bunch of advantages and perhaps one minor disadvantage to using SOAP-based web services. The minor disadvantage is that hearkening back to our understanding of HTTP, HTTP is a stateless protocol. It's really just about communications. And there are a lot of things that we need to do in the scope of these conversations between client and service that is greater than just tossing data back and forth. And SOAP is a protocol, and extensions to SOAP create a collection of protocols that help us add additional functionality on top of HTTP. In order to add that additional functionality, there's a collection of bytes that need to go down the stream along with the data that we're sending and receiving, and that means that the communication is a little bit more verbose than it might be if we were just using simple REST-based calls, for example. That's really the only disadvantage. The other potential disadvantage for folks that aren't using ASP.NET is that if you're not using ASP.NET, that SOAP programming can require a lot of plumbing work on the part of the developer. But luckily, since we're talking about ASP.NET developer, the combination of ASP.NET and the .NET namespaces, as well as Visual Web Developer, does the vast majority of the plumbing work for you. So it makes web service programming very easy. Now, the kinds of things that SOAP extensions, like the WSI extensions, can add are things that we can't get in other ways with HTTP. So things like security, built-in security with Kerberos support, for example, a ticket-based security mechanism. Things like reliability, ensuring that the message was received and processed. Routing, so the ability to send these requests rather than just sort of to an endpoint and back, to be able to send requests to an endpoint and then to another endpoint and then to another endpoint before it comes back with a compiled response. So SOAP and WSI-based web services can be extremely complex. There's tons and tons of rich functionality to solve all kinds of specific needs. All of that is beyond the scope of this particular video. So what I want to do here, now that we understand sort of what web services are, and why SOAP web services are interesting to us, I want to show you simply how to build them using ASP.NET and Visual Web Developer, and then leave it up to you, if you're going to be doing some intense web services development, to explore the details through the rich collection of data that's available both at Microsoft.com and on the public internet about SOAP web services and the WSI extensions. So let's go ahead and fire up Visual Web Developer Express and then create our first web service. So here I am in Visual Web Developer, and we're about to create our first web service. Now, let's go ahead and say create a website, and you recall that normally we've been creating our website using the file system and then using the built-in web server in Visual Web Developer to do our debugging with. But in this case, I don't want to do that, and the reason is that you'll recall when we go into debug mode, as we've created a ASP.NET application, when we go into debug mode, Visual Web Developer fires up its built-in web server and dynamically assigns a port number to run the application on. That's fine, except the problem that we're going to have with that is we're building a web service, and that web service has to run at a known endpoint so that when we later build the client can know the exact and complete endpoint with which to call that web service. And we don't want that. We don't want to use a dynamically assigned port number, because if we did that, every time we wanted to test this, we would have to start up the web service in one instance of Visual Web Developer, take the port number, and then copy the port number into the second instance of Visual Web Developer in which we were developing our client. And you can do that, but it's far more complex than things need to be. So we're just going to create our web service in the IIS instance that's installed here on my developer machine. So I'm going to, in the locations dialog, I'm going to choose HTTP instead of file system. And you'll see here, it says HTTP localhost, so I'm going to go against the IIS instance on my local dev machine here. And we're just going to call this Joe's WS for web service. Now, I'm not going to create an ASP.NET website. Instead, I'm going to create an ASP.NET web service. And I'm happen to be using Visual Basic. This is going to be so simple that it's not going to warrant a separate video for C#. If I get to some more advanced stuff, I'll do separate videos for the separate languages. But in this case, this is going to be so trivial, it won't matter. So I'm going to say OK, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to generate our web service. And the things to note here, first, is that we don't have an ASPX page. We have an ASMX page, service.asmx, or ASMX. And then in our app_code directory, we have the service.vb file. And if you were working in C#, it would be service.cs. We have an app underscore data directory, because many web services are going to use some sort of a database. And then, of course, we have the web.config file. Over here in our code, we have some interesting differences. Now, one of, in my opinion, the real brilliances of ASP.NET and the way that it works with web services is that we've made every effort to make working with web services the same as working with any other .NET object or method. And you're going to see how this works here. So there are a couple of things that are specific to this class that implements a web service. The first is, of course, we're importing the namespaces, system.web.services and system.web.services.protocols. Also, down here you can see that we have a couple of attributes. Attributes, if you're not familiar with them, are a very powerful construct in .NET programming. Attributes basically are decorations that add information to some sort of a declaration, like a class or a method. And here we're adding a web service namespace, and we're just taking the Visual Web Developer default of tempori.org. When you go to deploy a web service in your production environment, you're probably going to want to change this to be something that's specific to your company or the application that you're working on. And then we have this web service binding that says that this web service conforms to the WSI basic profile. I mentioned the WSI standards before, and you don't need to really know anything about how what that means. Just suffice to say that this is telling the runtime that this is a standards-based web service, and if you were going to get into more advanced web service programming using the different WSI standards, you might manipulate this. But in our case, we're never going to have to touch these things. Now, a really important aspect here is that our service class inherits from system.web.services.webservices. Right? So we're inheriting from the web service base class. Now here's the really great part. See here where we have this just basic method. This is a method in our service class called hello world. We're going to change it in a minute. But notice that this is just a basic method, right? And there's nothing special about it except this little attribute. So this method, hello world, is decorated with the web method attribute. And the web method attribute tells the .NET infrastructure that, hey, this method is going to be called as a web service. Now, what that means is that we don't have to worry about any of the plumbing. Remember that the data is going to be passed back and forth over HTTP. But here in our .NET programming, data is going to be represented as the respective .NET type that's used to represent the data that we're working with in our method. So in order to pass that data back and forth, the data will have to be serialized out of the object, whatever type it is, into something that can be streamable as a byte stream over HTTP, and then the receiving end would have to be received from that stream and then bundled back up into, converted back into a .NET type. And we don't want to have to do all of that bundling and unbundling stuff ourselves, but just by using the web method declaration here, we're telling the .NET infrastructure that we would like .NET to take care of all of that plumbing for us. Now, certainly, if you become a web service guru and you have a need to tweak it, at the sort of, at the bits and bytes level, you can do that to your heart's content. But I like the fact that I don't have to get into the plumbing unless I really want to. So here we have, apart from that attribute, just a standard .NET method. So let's change this method name to be say hello, and I want to take some input data. So we've declared this method say hello as string, so it's going to return a string value, and you can see at the moment it's returning a static string. I want to take an input parameter. So let's say the input parameter will be user's name, and it's just going to be a string, right? Now, of course, you're free to work with more advanced data types. Right? I'm just going to use a standard string, and I don't want to return just hello world. I want to return a variation of whatever the user's name that got passed in was. So I'm going to say return hello plus the username. All right. So that's our entire web service. That's all we need to do. And let's just run this. Now, notice it's going to modify the service so that its debugging is enabled in the web.config file. And lo and behold, we get this user interface. Now, remember, we didn't create a web form. We just created the service, and the service is going to respond to a request. So where did this stuff come from? Well, This is a test harness that's automatically generated by the .NET runtime. Notice a couple of things. First is this link for this service description. And if you look down here in the bottom left-hand corner, the URL that link actually points to is the service.smx file with a parameter of WSDL, or Web Services Definition Language, and we pronounce it WSDL. If we click on that, what we'll see is a collection of XML, and as we scroll down a little bit, notice, remember what our name was, Say Hello. So here's an XML definition for Say Hello response, our Say Hello method itself. Say Hello Soap In, Say Hello Soap Out. Right. Header and body, input, output. So this is all of the plumbing, and this is an XML definition of our service, what its callable methods are, what its input expectations are, and what those methods will return based on those input expectations, so what the output expectations can be. Now, we never have to touch this if we don't want to. Again, if you're doing super advanced stuff, you might want to come in and tweak the WSDL, perhaps, but you don't have to. Suffice to say that when we create our client coming up here in a few minutes, the client will pull down this WSDL file and will use it to figure out what we need to do on the client so that we don't have to do it manually. Very clever. Now, we also have a test harness here where we can actually invoke the method. So we created the Say Hello method, right? And down here we've got the XML. This is some of the expectations, the input-output expectations. Good for documentation purposes if we get into more advanced SOAP-based programming. In our case, let's just enter the parameter, invoke this test harness, right? So I've entered a value. The parameter's name is username, and Joe Stagner is going to be the value. And now if I click on invoke, you'll see we get the hello and then the input parameter. So this is the XML that's returned by our service method call. We didn't have to do anything XML related. We just programmed like we were programming against any other .NET object. Super. So now that we have our service implemented, we can now move on, create a new web application, and make it the consuming client for this service. So let's do that now. So now all we need is a simple client to consume the web service that we just created. Now, in .NET, that consuming client can be anything that you want. It can be another web application. It can be a Windows Forms application. It can be a Windows service, not a web service, but a Windows service. It can be a command line application even. It can be a WPF application. Doesn't matter. In our case, because we're working with Visual Web Developer, we're going to make it a simple web application. So to do that, let's go ahead and create another website. Now in this case, I'm going to go ahead and create this in the file system because we don't care about the port that it runs on. So we call this Joe's WS Test. And remember, we're not going to create a web service here. We're going to create an ASP.NET website. And this is stuff we've been doing all along. So I'm going to go here into design mode, and we're going to add just a little bit of user interface. Let's create a text box where we can enter the name that's going to be passed back to our service. And then, of course, we're going to need a button that will be used to call that web service. And then let's add a label, and we can use that label as the container for the return value. Let's tell a button, let's set the button's text to equal to call the service, and let's blank out the label's text. All right, that'll be empty until we get the return value. Okay, so now we want to call that web service from here in our ASPX page. And that web service, it happens to be on the same machine because we're doing the development here, but it doesn't matter where it is. As long as it's accessible over HTTP, we can get to it. So let's see how we're going to do that. What we want to happen is when we click on this button, we want the code to call the web service, pass in the value that's in this text box, and then take the return value and put it in the label. So let's go and call the service. Now, remember, that service, the service we created previously, lives out there on the internet someplace, sitting on a server, and we need to call it. But we need to know where it is. So, The first thing that we need to do is to create a web reference, just like we would create a reference to another object, a .NET object or a COM object that we were going to use in our application. We need to create a reference to our SOAP web service. So to do that, I'm going to right-click on my solution and say, add a web reference. Now, I can enter the URL here, so I happen to know that it's at localhost joesws. But since I'm working on my machine, I can take this sort of quickie development hint and say web services on the local machine. And here it's found the joesws service for us. So I can say that's the one that I want. All right, so we'll choose that one. I'm going to change the name to be Joe's Test Web Service, and now I'm going to say add a reference. So when I click on add a reference, you'll notice what happens over here in our Solutions Explorer. In the background, what's actually happened is that Visual Web Developer has gone and grabbed two files off the server where my web service is hosted. One is this WSDL file, right? That's the one that we looked at previously. The other is this DISCO file or discovery file. Now the discovery file tells Visual Web Developer what services are available over there on the server I just pointed it to for me to program against. And the WSDL file is all of the object definition, so things like the service methods, what the input expectations and the output expectations can be. And the WSDL file is used by Visual Web Developer to implement IntelliSense here in our development environment. So now that I've created this reference, I can program against this type Joe's Test Web Service. So let's do that. And again, I'm programming in Visual Basic here, but I think this example is so trivial that it doesn't require a separate video for C#. When I get into the more advanced data access stuff, I'll definitely do videos in both languages. So here, I can just create an instance of that web service class. So I'll call it my web service as. Now notice, I have IntelliSense for Joe's Test Web Service. That's the SOAP web service that lives out there on another machine someplace. But I have IntelliSense because Visual Web Developer took the reference that I gave it, downloaded the WSDL file, and created the IntelliSense data necessary on the fly. Right? So that's the name of the service object, and the class that I want to create an instance of is service. Right, you remember that was the name of the class back when we created the web service. And now I can program against it. So I can say, so remember what we want to happen here is I want to call a web service and I want to take the I want to take whatever text I enter into this text box, and then I want to send it to the web service. I want to take whatever the web service returns and push it into the text property of this label control. So here I can say label1.text equal my service dot say hello. So remember that was the name of the method, say hello. Now you notice here that there's also another method. We didn't write this one, but we get it anyway, say hello async. Say hello async, as you can guess, is an asynchronous version of our say hello method. So the specifics of using the built-in asynchronous calling mechanism in ASP.NET Web Services is beyond the scope of this video. But just know that if you need to call a collection of web services all at the same time, you can do that asynchronously without any additional programming on your part. We're just going to call the standard say hello method, which is a synchronous one. And we're going to pass in some data, and to do that, we're going to pass in the text box 1.text. Property. Right? So that will be whatever we enter into that text box. Right? Notice this IntelliSense is giving us a message that we've dimmed this my service, but we haven't assigned it value. So to do that, we will use the new keyword. And now we're all set. So let's go ahead and run our client here. Notice it tells us we need to modify the web.config file for debugging. We're used to that by now. So I'm going to enter my name, call the service, and voila, we have the return value. Right? So what's happening under the covers is that the web server where our user interface is running is making a call to the web server where the service is running, and all of the SOAP plumbing is happening for us in the background. So this is a very easy way to distribute your application across multiple web servers. Now, in the next video, I'll show you how to do AJAX-style programming, and one of the things that you can do with AJAX-style programming is to do an AJAX-style method call where we're calling a service that lives on a server, but directly from the browser. In this case, when we make this call, remember, clicking on this button executes the code behind for this button instance, and that means that it's running on a web server where this application is hosted, and that web server is calling theoretically a different server where the service runs. Now in our case, because we're in a dev environment, it just happens to be the same server, but the technology doesn't distinguish that. So hopefully this has given you a quick introduction so that you can get started to do some web service oriented programming, and we'll move forward and look at AJAX style programming in the next video.